Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument this morning is Brown against the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Goldman.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jonathan Goldman. I represent the plaintiff in this case. I'm going to discuss three issues today. The first is that the plaintiff can set forth a prima facie case of race discrimination because he was similarly situated to the white employees who were promoted instead of him. Secondly, the plaintiff can set forth a case of a prima facie case of retaliation. And lastly, that the plaintiff has established that the reason set forth for failing to promote him were a pretext. First, plaintiff can set forth a prima facie case of race discrimination because he was similarly situated to other white employees.
Mr. Goldman, in the interest of focusing this case, do you have any comment in response to the supplemental letter that the Attorney General filed with respect to the Ledbetter case? Because it certainly seems to me, in the light of Ledbetter, some of the grievances that Mr. Brown filed are simply too late at this point.
Your Honors, we, in light of the Ledbetter versus Goodyear case, the 1998 and 1999 promotions would seem to be outside the scope of the too late for them to be a part of this case in terms of the but in terms of background for the case.
Oh, sure, an evidentiary way, but you can't make those part of the discriminatory acts that you're talking about.
And we understand that.
Okay.
In terms of the similarly situated employees, I'm referring to Clifford Jopp and Ray Ronda and Deborah Jacobson.
But let me ask you another question, which is, even if we were to agree with you that in light of the summary judgment standard, Mr. Brown has established a prima facie case, what is your best argument that the reasons that the department gave for its actions were pretextual?
Your Honor, those reasons were primarily given by Mr. Malcolm Boyle, and they were primarily based on subjective factors, characterizations of Mr. Brown. There's many reasons why those characterizations are false in light of objective information and in light of a subsequent supervisor, Ray Ronda.
The question is not, however, whether they were false, but whether they were lies. That is, we don't determine whether the employer was right to think something. The only question is whether the employer was honest. Now, what reason have we in this record to think that the explanations were dishonest?
Getting back to my point, I think that those factors do show that Malcolm Boyle was dishonest with relation to his assessment of Mr. Brown's character and his argumentativeness. The argumentativeness came up in light of Mr. Brown's responses to his not being promoted. The characterizations are purely subjective as opposed to objective data. Where there is objective facts, such as the number of projects he completed or the number of, his time getting into the office, the amount of revenue he created for the department, Mr. Boyle could not get around that.
But you know, there's nothing wrong with some subjective element to the assessment of an employee, and I take it you don't disagree that there were complaints from some of the client organizations that Mr. Brown visited, the Chicago Manufacturing Company, and it seems to me there was another one, Saporito Plating. So these complaints come in, Mr. Boyle sees that Mr. Brown isn't getting along. Now, you could call that subjective if you want, but why is it not genuine?
Well, Your Honor, there's a timeliness aspect. There's a time factor to it also, because the reason he was called argumentative and he was criticized for his relationship with clients.
And what other employees had those problems? I mean, why would that not be a reason? They didn't fire Mr. Brown. They just didn't promote him, right?
Yes, Your Honor. They didn't fire him. They didn't promote him. And they didn't discipline him either for any of these. And
right.
They didn't
one gets the sense of some sort of balance. You know, he does a very good job in many ways, but he's argumentative. They're getting complaints. And so they decide, they explain, that's why we decided to kind of keep him where he was.
Your Honor, that contributes to the aspect that it's a pretext. These items, these concerns were not raised until after they needed an excuse for not promoting him. They weren't brought to Mr. Brown's attention when they happened. Mr. Brown asked, what do you mean by argumentative, and that he was, the characterizations about his personality. And
was he unaware of the customer complaint?
The record indicates, I believe, that, yes, Your Honor, he was not made aware of these customer complaints to the extent that they've been brought out in response to his application for desire for the promotion.
When they came in, when someone says, I don't want him back here, and another complained about his, whatever we're going to call it, arrogance on the job site, I guess there were, 10 of them?
I believe there were 3 of them.
I thought there were more than 3, but whatever it is. But these are, did they share those with him? Not with regard to whether he's going to get promoted or not. Did he at least know that somebody had been that adamant about his service?
Your Honor, the record's a little unclear in that regard in terms of what was brought out at what particular point in time. But with regard to the criticism brought out in his 2000 performance evaluation, which followed a 1999 criticism of his work by one of his clients, Mr. Brown asked Malcolm Boyle, what do you mean by argumentative? And Malcolm Boyle couldn't give any examples of what particular incidents he was talking about, which indicates to me that these were not brought to his attention in a timely manner or in any way to discipline him for the things that were going on or to try to steer his performance any differently.
There is a difference, though, between performance or conduct that calls for discipline on the one side and performance or conduct that, while satisfactory, isn't enough to make you a candidate for promotion. Maybe plenty of people don't get promoted who aren't being disciplined. They're perfectly good workers. They just aren't being promoted.
Yes, Your Honors. And in light of that, this was not such a serious aspect of his work that it made him subject to being subject to discipline.
Right, right. I accept that.
Thank you.
Well, before you sit down, I'm puzzled by the fact that you've named the state of Illinois as a defendant. Why is it a proper defendant?
Your Honor, the plaintiff filed a pro se complaint originally,
yes.
And when we filed an amended complaint, we named the proper party.
Was the state of Illinois deleted as a defendant?
I don't think it was deleted from the caption, just as a matter of pro forma.
What makes the state of Illinois a proper defendant?
Your Honor, I don't believe that they are a proper...
Why, when you filed a complaint, did you name it as a defendant? The fact that a pro se plaintiff doesn't know what he's doing shouldn't mean that a lawyer doesn't know what he's doing.
Yes, Your Honors. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Legner.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brett Legner. I'm an assistant Illinois attorney general, and I represent the Illinois Department of Natural Resources in this matter.
And not, I take it, the state of Illinois.
And not the state of Illinois. And Your Honors, it is true that the pro se complaint named the state of Illinois, but as a matter of practice throughout this, we sort of considered the plaintiff to be state of Illinois, Illinois Department of Natural Resources, just one long named plaintiff. But yes, as Judge Easterbrook correctly pointed out, the state of Illinois certainly is not a proper plaintiff in this action. Your Honor, as counsel admitted, the 1998 and 1999 fails to promote are out. Those are not in play in this case. Brown was otherwise unable to meet his prima facie case for the retaliation claims for the 2000 and 2001 failures to promote because he did not show that any similarly situated employees were treated differently than he was. In his reply brief, he refers only to Clifford Jopp and Deborah Jacobson. Before this court, he also indicated Ray Ronda. But there are significant differences between all of those employees and Mr. Brown, material differences. To begin with, Deborah Jacobson was never promoted to the position that Mr. Brown sought to be promoted to. She was promoted to the assistant professional scientist. She was never promoted to the associate professional scientist. She's simply not comparable. She was never promoted to the job that Mr. Brown sought.
Promoted to his level?
She was promoted to his level, yes. She started a level below him, was promoted to his level in 1998. After 3 years at the level below that. Simply being promoted to his level and not the level he sought calls into question different qualifications, different requirements. They're just simply not materially the same considerations involved in determining whether to promote her versus whether to promote Mr. Brown. With regard to Clifford Jopp, there's no evidence in the record that he had anywhere near the history of complaints from clients or the negative or the criticisms in evaluations.
Can you answer the question Judge Mannion asked of your opponent? To what extent does the record show that Mr. Brown was contemporaneously made aware of these complaints?
And as counsel correctly noted, the record's a little unclear on that. It is clear that Mr. Brown obviously knew that certain clients were complaining about him because he responded to some of the complaints, saying that, for instance, when Chicago Manufacturing Company complained that, well, they're not keeping me informed, his response was, well, I informed somebody else and they didn't tell that person. So he certainly knew, and clients were telling, you know, the department, the WMRC, don't assign him here anymore. So he knew as a matter of practice that these things were going on at the time. He may not have known of every letter that was received from all the different clients, but he definitely knew that there were clients unhappy with him. He has responses that are in the record to those things.
Okay.
And with regard to Jopp, there's none of that. There are no client complaints. There are no concerns about his argumentativeness. There are no concerns about his punctuality or his management of the caseload. And these are all material considerations in determining whether to promote somebody to the next higher level.
But, you know, on the punctuality point, I thought I saw something in the record indicating that although Mr. Brown may not have gotten to work as early as maybe it was expected, he stayed late, he got the job done.
That's true. The record absolutely shows that when Mr. Brown arrived late, he stayed late. That's true.
So it seems like an awfully picky point to make.
Well,
for a professional.
I understand that. And it's also a consideration not that they were firing him, you know, not that it was okay for him to, you know, sort of create his own flex time, you know, but the question is whether he deserves promotion, especially relative to other employees who don't have that issue. So certainly, you know, it's not a question of firing him because of that, but it is a criticism that didn't also apply to Jopp. But in any case, that is a relatively minor criticism compared to what's really important, the client complaints. And that those are, again, especially important in a situation such as this, where their job is to work with clients.
Now, I take it this agency kind of goes out proactively and tries to help people comply with the law? Is that what they
That's
do?
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor. The waste management, the WMRC, is a survey within the Office of Scientific Research
when
and
you
Analysis.
Call it I thought that was a funny use of the noun survey. It has, like, in what sense is it a survey?
It's a survey in the sense that it's basically a bureaucratic or administrative designation is how they split up the Office of Scientific Research into four branches, which is essentially what, you know, maybe the synonym that we're looking for here.
Okay.
So. And turning to, finally to Ray Ronda, who certainly Brown does not even bring up as a comparable in his reply brief, I think it's clear at this point that Ronda was simply not comparable to Mr. Brown. When Mr. Ronda came to work at the department, he had a quarter century, 25 years of significant management experience in the private sector at Matsushita, way more experience than Mr. Brown. These simply were not on the same level with regard to experience and therefore qualifications for promotion to the next level. Turning to the pretext argument, again, Mr. Brown does not establish, offers no reason to believe that the department was lying when it advanced its reasons for not promoting him. Sure, Malcolm Boyle based some of the evaluations on subjective factors. But subjective factors, the case law is clear, it's okay to do that.
I mean, there certainly is a turnaround after Mr. Boyle leaves that job and Mr. Ronda comes in and the evaluations. One has the sense there's some at least terrible personality problem between Mr. Brown and Mr. Boyle, if not something racist or otherwise inappropriate.
Well, I think that it could be construed as a personality conflict. Different supervisors may get along with a different employee and subjectively rate them differently. That's true. But I don't think that establishes that Boyle was actually lying when he did the evaluations. And that's especially true, for instance, where Mr. Boyle writes on an evaluation that he thought that Mr. Brown was argumentative, and then receives a complaint from a client that says, among other things, that Mr. Brown is argumentative. These weren't things that, in this specific context, these weren't things certainly that Mr. Boyle was making up. And I think that in this factual context, there's no valid inference that Mr. Boyle was lying. And those are certainly backed up by all of the client complaints, the 10 client complaints from a number of different companies, Chicago Manufacturing, Saporito, Mr. Rundle from Solvent Systems, Inc., International Inc., who was specifically said that Brown had an adversarial relationship with him. So, again, I think that there's certainly support from these objective third party, from these third parties, that Mr. Boyle was in fact not lying. When, on the other hand, there's really no evidence that Mr. Boyle was lying. In addition to the failure to establish a prima facie case or pretext on the race discrimination claim, Mr. Brown failed to establish under the direct method that his failure to receive a promotion in 2000 was the result of retaliation for filing a grievance with the department's internal grievance system. Indeed, the evidence does not point directly to retaliation as the reason for that failure to promote. There's a history of evaluations going back to 1997, which indicated that Mr. Brown was argumentative, had problems managing his workload, etc. You have all the client complaints starting in 1999 with the Chicago Manufacturing Center, and continuing well past into 2001. That factual circumstance shows that that the failure to promote was not retaliation. There's nothing that points directly at retaliation. Certainly, Mr. Brown argues that 1 month after his discrimination complaint, the WMRC changed its policy, creating a second probationary period, and then Boyle's review of him a month later all of a sudden was sufficient to put him on probation. But again, the evidence, the record shows that Boyle did not even know that the evaluation would cause him to go into his probationary period. This just simply does not point directly to retaliation. And finally, touching on one last argument he makes in retaliation, which was that when Ronda checked, Your Honors, I'm out of time. If this court has no further questions, I will stop here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Goldman?
Yes. I'd just like to briefly discuss the retaliation issue. Mr. Brown filed an internal complaint in February of 2000, which became known to his supervisors. In March of 2000, the department did enact this probation, the secondary probationary policy, which in April of 2000, when Malcolm Boyle gave him an extremely low performance evaluation, it affected him directly. He grieved that internally, or he provided a rebuttal to that internally, and during that process, it certainly must have come out that they were aware of this probationary policy and what effect it would have. And even though he had completed a project in 70-plus hours as opposed to 150-plus hours as they had complained, that should have made a difference on his evaluation, and that should have resulted in him not getting probation. Instead, he did get probation, which took him out of the picture for a promotion. I see that my time is out, Your Honors. Thank you.
Well, the case is taken under